It was a cold winter's night, mid-December. The Alberta sun had long ago slipped away from the prairies and hidden behind the mountains. The days were short, and I was fearing the weeks ahead. 10 sermons in 15 days. That's what it was like in my first congregation in rural southern Alberta. We had 2 services, morning, afternoon, every Sunday. And then we had Christmas Eve, Christmas morning. Thankfully, they had given up second Christmas the next day. Some of you remember that. 2 more services the next Sunday. Old Year's, New Year's, 2 more services the next Sunday. That's what I was facing, and I was tired, and we hadn't even begun the journey. I sat in my parsonage, a single man, thinking about how I was going to face the road ahead, and there was one bright spot on this dark night. It came from Calgary. I didn't have a television, so I listened to the radio, turned off the lights in the house, and sat back in a chair and listened. Every Sunday night, 10 o'clock, the drama came on the radio. It was often a science fiction drama. It lasted just for an hour, but it was very well done. They do that in Canada, you know. This one caught me by surprise because it was about the galaxies, space, time, all of that. And out there, some time ago, in worlds beyond our imaginings, you know, in a galaxy far away, that kind of thing, there had been, from before anybody could remember, a race of incredible beings. They were filled with light and love and joy, creativity. They roamed throughout space looking for new worlds that were still being born, settling planets, blessing those creatures that were already there. They were not the creators, but they had the capability of creative activity. Along the way, however, you might know this, a mutant strain had developed. And so One group, one clan, one family, one bunch of these bright beings had devolved into nasty darkness. They were fed by power and ego and self-interest. And they became as ambitious as their cousins for reaching the limits of the known universe and going beyond it, to spread what they could of groping and grabbing and holding and destroying and taking. And now the race was on between these 2 great peoples. And the battle was beginning to aim for this Milky Way solar system. And down there, as they explored from star to star and planet to planet, they found life already existing on the 3rd rock from the sun. The bright beings got there, but realized that their dark cousins had already come. In fact, they had begun the work of twisting and using and usurping. And the first creatures that looked toward the heavens were already darkened in heart and mind. The bright beings said, "What are we going to do about this? This is a wonderful, lovely place. What can be done?" They were the kind of creatures that did not tamper with civilizations already in existence or try to coerce in any way. But they decided to do this one thing. It had never been done before. They decided to take some of the genetic material from their own gene code and subtly, without any ruckus, implant this genetic material in the womb of a human creature, hoping against hope, praying to whatever gods there might be, that whatever life was born to this young woman would somehow set back the powers of darkness, push back against the evil that was twisting, help the day overcome the night. Well, this was a Sunday in dark December, shortly before Christmas, and I realized that I was hearing the gospel message in a whole new way over this Canadian radio station with a drama, a science fiction drama. But it got me thinking. It got me thinking. We're so focused at Christmas time on cute kids and babies in mangers and songs and carols and what I get out of this and what gifts God gives to us. Had I ever stopped to think what it was like from the other side? From God's side, from heaven's side, from the side of the angels of glory. Can you imagine this thing taking place on the third rock from the sun, in the Milky Way galaxy, the solar system, and the drama that would affect everything, 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 everywhere? And as Eve and Adam succumbed to the forces of darkness that were not from God, but were not outside of God's care, the universe fell dark. This is what C.S. Lewis does when he describes planet Earth in his space trilogy, right? When he talks about out of the silent planet, there's that hideous strength and there's Perlandra, and out of the silent planet, what he's talking about is that sometime God just quarantines planet Earth because it's gotten so dark, so desperate, so demonic that unless someone puts a stop to these things, it'll contaminate the whole of the universe. And what's God to do? What's God to do? The COVID pandemic has made us think about these things in new ways. We were untouchable, right? We had our health system. We had our armies. We had our economy. We have everything ranged against any threats of this world. And then we breathed on one another, and we became assassins of one another. We killed one another. And the hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, have died in our world, not by guns, not by starvation, but by hugs and kisses. It's a horrible thing. It is so wonderful to be coming this side of it with the vaccinations and the possibility that we can recover our sense of protection again. But there's a greater pandemic going on, a pandemic that is more insidious, more deadly, more stupefying than COVID-19. And this is why when John, Jesus' best friend, beloved disciple, tries to tell the story in his old age in Ephesus, he wants us to hear again not just what Jesus did, not just what Jesus said, but the world-changing implications of everything that was taking place. When the third rock from the sun, quarantined in the universe by God, became the target of a vaccine that humans couldn't produce. John reaches back to the language of creation in Genesis, and he helps us understand that what is happening when Jesus comes is not just a cute bedtime story. This is the moment that defines time and eternity. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in Him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, his name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world came into being through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But to all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood or the will of the flesh or of the will of a man, but of God. And the Word became flesh, and he lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. The vaccine hit planet, the COVID, the pandemic hit planet Earth. This is the vaccine. And John will tell us that in so many ways throughout his gospel. Read it again, as I've done several times in this past week. Read the gospel through as a whole. Not just bits and pieces. Read the whole thing. Ignore the chapters. Ignore the verses. Read the whole thing. And here's what you find. Jesus is constantly talking about light. I am the light of the world, he says. He who comes to me will not walk in darkness. He who believes in me, the light of life will be in him. And he shows us the stories, the doppelganger. This is a big one. This is a big one. Chapter 3, maybe you've got it memorized, maybe you know it. What's the story about as chapter 3 opens for us? We read bits and pieces of chapter 3 this morning, already in worship. It's Nicodemus. Yeah, Nicodemus comes to dialogue with Jesus. We're so fixated on verse 16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life, that we don't see the lead into that. Nicodemus came to Jesus when? At night. When it was dark. And when you read John's story once again, Jesus' story in John, notice that the story does not end. There is no culmination in which Jesus and Nicodemus shook hands. Nicodemus said, I've learned a thing or two, and he walked away. What happens? It starts as an investigation. It continues as a dialogue, and then it becomes a monologue and a sermon. It ends with Jesus talking about walking in the light. We never do find out what Nicodemus did with it. John's not concerned about that, but he's concerned about whether or not we have left the darkness and come into the light. The doppelganger comes in chapter 13, the twin, the opposite. What happens in chapter 13? 3:13. Well, the Greeks have come in chapter 12. They've seen Jesus doing miraculous signs and wonders. Now they come to Andrew and they say, hey, we want to see Jesus too. Andrew comes to Jesus and says, hey, even the world wants to come, because Greeks, world, same thing. For God so loved the Greeks, God so loved the world. That's all the same thing. Here comes the world looking. They've seen the signs. What happens? Jesus says, ah, now the hour has come. Glorify your Son. What's glory? Well, we can't describe it. But we do have connotations to it in our minds, don't we? Brightness, light, power, radiance, glory. Psalm 29. when one of these summer thunderstorms comes across from Milwaukee. Good things, but sometimes bad things come from Wisconsin. Comes across Lake Michigan. Stand on the bluffs up there by Lake Michigan and read Psalm 29. David sees this building storm, the clouds piling up, the darkening skies and the lightning flashing first up there hidden behind the clouds and then streaking down toward heaven. And the trees tremble and shake and the animals hide. And then Psalm 29 finishes off. And in his temple all cry, glory! That's what we think about with glory. So the world has seen the signs of Jesus, the miraculous signs, and comes. Ah, the hour of glory has come. And into the upper room strut the disciples with Jesus. We're with him. We don't need to show our passes. We're with him. Light surrounds them. Glory surrounds them. They sit at table. He does some weird things like washing their feet. Peter says, you can't do that. Well, I have to. Okay, get on with it then. And there they sit at the table, basking in the glory. And Jesus nods over to Judas and says, yeah, you're going to do what you're going to do, aren't you? And Judas kind of nods and he gets up from the table and he walks out. What does John tell us? And it was night. You get it? Nicodemus, chapter 3, comes at night and walks in the light. Judas trounces in the light. And he leaves. And it was night. This is a huge thing in John's gospel. Read it through, read it through, read it through. Light, darkness. God, evil. Grace, sin. Wholesomeness, destruction. These are the themes that run through the Gospel of John. And Jesus is the center point of all light. Think of the great story at the heart of the Gospel. Chapter 9, the whole thing. John spends more time telling us this story than any other story in the entire gospel. What's the story in chapter 9? Well, they came to town, and there was a man sitting there begging. He was blind. And the typical social customs got the disciples talking among themselves. Sinner. You think it was him? You think it was his parents? What were they doing before they got married? They were talking. Jesus says, you don't get it, do you? And then he made clay. And he put it on the man's eyes, and he sent him to wash it off, and the man could see. Now, there's a weird one for you. Why didn't you just snap his fingers? Why didn't you just say, look? But Jesus does what Jesus did with the Father and the Spirit at the beginning of time in the creation of Adam, reshaping the clay of the earth and forming a new human being. So the man comes back seeing, and people say, this is weird. He's not supposed to see. Well, it's a different man. No, I'm the same guy. I can see now. They go to his parents. Is this your son? Looks like our son, but you'll have to ask him what happened. They were afraid. They go to the man and say, who did this? What? You're asking me? You're the teachers of the law, you're the religious leaders, and you don't know? Do you want to go and worship him too? No, that's okay. And Jesus says this. He quotes from Isaiah, talking about those who are ever seeing but never perceiving, that the sighted people are blind and the blind can see. You get the picture? Darkness and light. Can't see, see. It's the central image to the gospel. And here's where it comes home to us. Because all of us have gotten the bug. All of us have gotten the virus. All of us have succumbed to the pandemic. All of us are blind. And all of us are walking in darkness. But, the Word that created the creation comes to the third rock from the sun, the planet quarantined in space by its creator, and the light shone in the darkness. And the darkness tried its best to put it out, and it could not. Jesus is that beacon of light who comes into the darkness of our pandemic world. And Jesus brings light and life. Great. So I didn't live there at that time. How does that affect me? Here's the great thing about the church. Here's the greatest thing about Second Christian Reformed Church of Grand Haven. You have the vaccine. You have the vaccine. You see, Jesus is that 10 billion watt light shining in our world. But there are places on the other side of the globe that can't see him. And the light doesn't shine there because it's still in darkness. Everybody around Jesus kind of glows simply by being in association with him. So what's Jesus to do? And here's where Jesus does something none of us saw coming. Remember that story in John chapter 20 where Jesus has gotten out of the grave and Mary Magdalene is there by the tomb and she is heartbroken because Jesus changed her life and now he's gone. They took him away. They killed him. Horrible. John tells us that the place where they buried Jesus was, let me see if I can get this straight. In a garden? In a garden? Why is that so significant? John has been calling our attention to Genesis all along. Where did human life begin? In a garden? In a garden? And what happens? Mary is weeping and wailing. She can't see for the tears in her eyes. And then out of her stained peripheral vision, she notices a man. It's got to be somebody who knows something about things here. Sir, she says to him, it's got to be the gardener. If you've taken his body away, tell me where it is and I'll go take care of it. Silly Mary, that's not the gardener. Wait a minute. John never says, silly Mary. John, in fact, never tells us that Mary got it wrong. Why? Because the gardener has come back to the garden. And Mary is ready to clamp onto him, to glow with that light and allow his power of wattage to flow through her. And he says, no, hold off. Why? Well, he's already told his disciples about this in the sermon or the talk at the table, the upper room, the farewell discourse, John 14, 15, 16. He says, I'm going away, but I'm not going to leave you alone. What am I going to do? I'm going to send the Spirit, the Paraclete, the Counselor. He will come and he will teach you all things. And then at the heart of that, he says, abide in me. How can we abide in you if you're going to go away and we're going to be left here? The Paraclete, the Spirit will come. And then in John 20, that happens. Sometimes people pass over these verses in John 20 because the disciples are meeting on a Sunday evening in the upper room and Jesus is there with them and they're having a good old time and reminiscing and thinking, wow, can it get better than this? And we're told that Jesus does something at that point. Jesus stands and he looks at them and he what? He breathes on them. And they receive the Holy Spirit. You get it? We live in a Wi-Fi age. You can't get anywhere, even to church, without your cell phones and some wireless connection. You're in tune with the world. But are you in tune with heaven? If Jesus has breathed on you, you have the Wi-Fi connection. You've got the Spirit. So Jesus can leave that multi-million megawatt light and return to the glory of heaven. And what's left behind is you. And you're glowing. And you've got the vaccine. Because the Holy Spirit lives in you. Wow. Wow. And every time you touch someone else, take precautions in this COVID-19 age. Every time you love on someone else, the Spirit of Jesus is flowing through you. And you are bringing the light into the darkness. You are pushing back the pandemic. You are changing the scales of the universe. Because the light of the world has shined in the darkness. And you are glowing. Pray with me. Thank you, Jesus, for pushing back the pandemic that destroys all of us without your grace, mercy, and peace. Give us the ability to love as we have been loved, to care as we have been cared for, to share as you have shared so generously with us. Keep the Wi-Fi connection of the Spirit and alive in our lives, that even when we cannot see you with our physical eyes, our hearts burn with your love because we are connected to you. And in this world, which has known and continues to know so much of the pandemic of sin, allow us to be the antidote, the vaccine, as we touch one another and those around us with your light. In your name we ask these things.